This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to the Moneybox Live podcast. Christmas is about giving, especially for anyone with young children. But it's also a time when lots of people decide to give to charity as well. In fact, around £3 billion gets donated to good causes over the festive season. Research from the Charities Aid Foundation suggests half of us will dig deep over Christmas, compared to a third of people who give regularly throughout the rest of the year. But whether you're donating at Christmas, Ramadan, Hanukkah, or just a rainy Tuesday in March, how can you maximise the impact your donation has? And how can you be sure that all your money is going to the cause you want to support and that scammers don't hook you by the heartstrings? Before we meet today's charity experts, let's hear from some Christmas shoppers. Producer Catherine Lund went to Bury to ask people there if they give to charities and why.
Yes, I do. Several charities. Rosemere Cancer Charity, which is based in Preston. We donate through work because it's our chosen charity of the year. So Air Ambulance, especially the one in Cumbria because they rescued me from a mountain. And another one is the Homeless Hounds Charity because nobody thinks about dogs.
And how do you donate? Is it money in a bucket? Is it direct debit? Is it at Christmas you just...
We do it through raising funds through work or selling charity Christmas cards. And the air ambulance, just when I see them.
Does Christmas prompt you to be extra generous?
Not really, no. Because we've donated many times during the year.
And how do you donate? Is that money in a bucket? Is it direct debit?
Online.
Do you donate to charity?
Always to the hospice on a direct debit every month. And I've known several people that have been in there and they're absolutely fantastic. The work they're doing is, a lot of it's run on donations.
Well, listening to that is Philippa Cornish, Head of Charities at the Charities Aid Foundation, and David Holdsworth, Chief Executive of the Charity Commission for England and Wales. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you both for being with us. Philippa, we heard there a lot of people do give all year round. Now, you did that research I mentioned into just how much we give at Christmas. What are our habits?
So, yeah, we do, as you said, see people that do support very regularly all year round, which is much appreciated by charities. But we do see that go up in the festive period, often because people are reminded maybe a little bit more of the needs of others, or they're switching to a donation rather than perhaps giving a gift or sending a card.
And other charitable causes that we tend to donate more to at this time of year?
Yes, often we see that people maybe give to food banks or fuel banks or charities that are helping people that maybe particularly are in need. And that's a little bit more visible, especially as the weather changes. But some people also just up their regular donations to causes that are very close to them. We heard a few of your guests talking about charities that are important to them, and they may just choose to give them a little more at Christmas.
Yes, the air ambulance for getting somebody off a mountain stood out, didn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
David, we're talking about Christmas being a big donation event. What about other religious festivals? Are there other celebrations that drive a lot of donations?
Absolutely. And as you've just said on the programme, most religions have giving and helping those in need at their heart. So Diwali, Ramadan, Passover are all big giving seasons.
And Philippa, some of those shoppers in Bury clearly had, as we were saying, a very personal connection to the charities they chose. Colin from Stockport says the same thing. He says, every year I choose one or two to support by monthly standing order and buying their products. This year it's prostate cancer and cancer research, as I recently recovered from prostate cancer. David, how do we typically give? Is it that sort of rattling tins outside supermarkets, or is it more about standing orders, online donations these days?
It's very much a personal choice, and I'd encourage people to make their own minds up. The key thing is about giving safely. Check the charity's name on our register. Check it's genuine before you give financial information, and then choose what works for you, whether it's via direct debit, whether it's giving to someone on the street. Choose something that works for you.
And Philippa, you can also donate through your pay, can't you? Which a lot of people won't have heard about.
Yes, that's right. There's lots of schemes out there called payroll giving. So CAF operates one of them where you can give from your pre-tax pay and you can support several charities or put it into account and let it accumulate and then decide where you want to give later, like responding to disaster appeal, sponsoring a friend. So it's very flexible and very tax efficient.
And I mean, as David says, you've got to make your own mind up about how best to give. But do you find, do people tend to give more or less to a human with a bucket compared to, I don't know, an online form or a website?
I think it really depends. As we heard from the shoppers spoken to on the street, it's personal. It's what inspires you or engages you. So it depends how you operate, whether you are very online and you like to read a lot of detail about it, that might move you. Or we saw from our research as well, a lot of people give because of personal connection. So recommendation from friends or family or a story that affected somebody close to them.
And increasingly, I see on social media people asking for donations to certain causes for their birthdays, that kind of thing, perhaps instead of cards.
Yes, exactly. And I think generally as Brits, we tend to be a little shy about our giving. But I think if we can be that little bit more open and talk about it, it will just encourage those around us who can afford to also give, which ultimately just helps all the charities out there that need our support.
OK, well, Chris has been in touch with us about another way to give.
Hi, Moneybox Live. My name's Chris at Wigan and Lee Hospice, and I'd like to talk to you about wills. People who put a donation in their will to their local charity, local hospice, it's something that we're really, really honoured to receive. It's a bit like people who plant trees for the seeds of the apples they'll never eat. The hospices are very much similar to that. So people can look after their hospices, we'll be there to look after them.
Oh, Chris, thank you very much for reminding us of that. Philippa, giving in wills can be a really big part of donations.
Absolutely. Last year, I think it was worth over £1.8 billion to charities.
£1.8 billion?
Exactly. And it's increasing, likely because we obviously have an ageing UK demographic. And for many donors, leaving money in a will can be a way to give a more substantial donation than maybe they could in their lifetime.
David, what about other ways to maximise our donations? I'm thinking particularly about gift aid.
Yes, absolutely. If you're a UK taxpayer, then there is the benefit if your donation can be increased. All you need to do is give your details to the charity when at the time you donate, and they can then claim that money from the HMRC, and it increases your donation at no cost to you.
And what always surprises me about gift aid, actually, is even if you're donating stuff to a charity shop, so not a financial donation, just, you know, handing over your old books or pots and pans or whatever, they can still claim that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think every charity, what they will do is they'll give you a form to fill in that has the details on it. All you need to do is complete that and they will do everything for you.
Now, Philippa, what about people asking, particularly I think this time of year, asking for donations, knocking on our doors, or so-called chuggers trying to stop people in the street and get them to sign up to a direct debit? That can really put pressure on people, can't it?
Can, and really no one should ever feel pressured into donating to charity. It's really the donor's prerogative to do it, like David said, in the way that they want and to who they want. So it's really important that we maintain trust in charities. And I think if anyone does feel pressured, they should know that charities are regulated and you can easily make a complaint to the fundraising regulator if you feel like there has been bad practice, and they will investigate. It's really important, and there's hundreds and thousands of great charities out there that do this very responsibly. So it's, you know, it's on us all to call out the bad practice.
Mm. And on that subject then of calling out potentially bad practice, Moneybox listener Brian from the Isle of Arran has emailed. His question is, if I donate to a charity, how do I know how much of my donation actually reaches the beneficiaries of the charity? How is my donation divided up? Philippa, is there a way for people to check how much of their donation actually ends up being spent on the good cause they want to support rather than on, say, admin?
So charities obviously need money to run and then money to deliver their services. Like, both of those elements are important. So the core costs also need funding. But larger charities that are registered on the commission will have lots of information and breakdown about how that money is spent. So it's always good for the donor to check, or the prospective donor to check that, and make a decision where they feel really comfortable. But, you know, charities, like any organisation, have costs that need covering as well. So if you do feel like you just really want to support the cause itself, giving unrestrictedly and giving to the core costs is very helpful for the charity to be sustainable and keep doing all that good work.
David, Philippa makes a really good point, doesn't she? Charities do need to spend money, some money, on things like admin. There'll be a back office that supports the frontline work. But you can also see how a lot of people listening won't want a donation to go on biros and staplers instead of the actual good cause. What is that? Is there a right balance that should be struck?
So we all care, don't we? What we want to do is help, and that's why we donate. So what you can see in law, every penny a charity spends has to further its charitable purpose. So even where it's being spent on core costs, the public can rest assured that it's tested, that that is driving that charity to deliver its services, deliver its charitable purpose. What I would say is go on our website, on the register, put in a search engine, check a charity. If it's on our register, you will be able to see there exactly how that money is being spent.
Well, that will be very useful, won't it? We've had a message from Erica who says, considering how much people give to charities, why are we not told about the salary levels of senior executives in charities? Philippa, this is one that comes up a lot, isn't it? Some people do get quite upset at the idea of particularly perhaps bigger charities paying their top staff quite competitive, quite generous salaries. And they might think, well, people who work in the charitable sector should be willing to work for less.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And there's two ways to look at that, really. First of all, there's over 160,000 charities in the UK, and over half of them have an income of less than £10,000. So, and they're majority staffed by volunteers. So when we talk about charity salaries, we're often talking about the very, very large charities, of which there's like under 100 that have a huge income. So, and those charities tend to be tackling issues that are really serious. They're finding a cure for cancer. They're tackling really systemic changes. And those are not things that you can do, you know, voluntarily or part-time. You need bright minds, a lot of energy and a lot of resource to really make that change.
Okay, well, another way a lot of people do donate to charities is through these online platforms, an increasingly big part of taking donations. Maureen has been in touch to ask about the online fees for some of those.
I wanted to give some money to my favourite charity, but as I was working on the webpage and filling in all the bits, it suddenly came up and it added a tip to my donation. And I think it might have been 12.5%. And I didn't really want to do that. So I went back a page, and that's where I found out that there were various tips that you could add. Unfortunately, there wasn't no tip. So I added the minimum, which was £7.50. And I just felt it was a shame. And the only way around it, if I want to do it next year, I donated £100. So I think to myself, well, I'll only donate £90 and then find a 10% tip. And then, you know, I've only spent my 100. But then the charity's missed out, haven't they?
Maureen, thank you very much for that. Philippa, there are rules, aren't there? The fundraising regulator has actually got some pretty clear rules for using tips and fees.
It does, yes. The fundraising regulator publishes a code of good practice and also some guidance on their website. And in both, there's a lot of information for both donors and prospective donors, but also the platforms themselves who are regulated by that regulator in terms of how they must display fees, be transparent about them, and just be really clear so that the donor can make an informed decision.
Are there any free alternatives then that don't charge a fee? Because we heard from Maureen there, it's going to actually affect how much she gives to the charity.
Yeah, so making an online transaction and if these platforms are doing things like raising awareness, that obviously comes with a cost that benefits the charity. So, you know, there's a way to give directly to charity, which, you know, you can then be assured that the majority of the donation is going to them. But I think we need to be cognizant that, like, it's a practice, it's raising awareness, it's doing a job of marketing, and obviously that comes with some cost, and that will either be on top of the donation or it might come out of the donation. And we just need to ensure the practice is that's as minimal as possible, and it's not, a you know, generating a profit for these platforms in that way.
Okay, well, let's hear from Lisa next. She gave money to what she thought was a registered charity, and she then discovered it wasn't quite the clear-cut good cause she thought it was. I spoke to her a little bit earlier.
Online, there was a charity campaign advertising sort of services to help members of the community with sort of vital forms of support. And it had a lot of sort of online momentum, very high-profile sort of social media accounts. And I think in total, I probably donated with my partner probably around £300.
So quite a substantial amount of money. When did you realise that that cash might not be being spent the way you expected it to and wanted it to?
There are a number of posts that were being put out. It seemed to be constantly asking for more money. And when I sort of questioned that, I was immediately blocked, and the account sort of retweeted me and encouraged 100,000 followers to sort of attack me.
Wow.
And I thought that was very, very out of place if you were sort of, you know, a genuine organisation.
So when you realised that you had given quite a lot of cash and this organisation wasn't what you thought it was, how did you feel about that?
Really quite exploited. I did start digging, you know, to have a look to see what their credentials actually were. And it turned out that they weren't a registered charity. They were a different type of organisation. There was no sort of avenue that you could really go down to sort of raise that with sort of any kind of authority. It turned out they'd had over £2 million worth of donations, yet they were putting out that they needed more and more money. It really started to, you know, stick in the back of the throat and made me feel, yeah, like I've been well and truly duped.
Has this changed your giving habits?
Yeah, I mean, I would never donate to an organisation that wasn't a registered charity any longer. So, yeah, I mean, I'm much less trusting now.
David, very upsetting for Lisa. She felt duped, she felt exploited. How can people give with confidence that they're not being misled?
It's so disappointing, isn't it? And whenever you hear these stories, it takes away from the great work of charities and the money they need to deliver the great frontline services they do. But as Lisa said, the best way is check a charity, put that in a search engine. That will bring up the registered charity's number. You can check that. If it's someone fundraising in person, if they're doing it within a local authority area, they should have a license that they can produce and show you. And again, you can check the details of that license against the online register. But the main thing is, do your due diligence, do a bit of research, really make sure before you give to charity that it is a genuine cause.
Yeah, I mean, I have fallen for something quite similar, actually. And it's I only did the research afterwards. So I gave money to what I thought was a charity supporting young people who've been affected by knife crime. And then I got back home and I looked them up and discovered it wasn't a charity, it wasn't regulated, and it wasn't spending the money in the way that I expected. So yes, I can second that. David, what about when registered charities, though, proper charities, go wrong? Because a lot of people listening might have donated to the Captain Tom Foundation, but the Charity Commission, which you're in charge of, found repeated instances of misconduct or mismanagement by the family who set up the charity in his name.
Yeah, so the good news is when a charity is registered, when it's regulated by us, when we do find there's wrongdoing, we step in swiftly, we take action. So the public can be reassured that by giving to charity, there is oversight of that money, there is oversight and protection as to what those charities must do. As we showed in the Captain Tom Foundation, in the small minority where it goes wrong, we step in, we take action.
How do you decide, though, when to step in? Do people have to report it to you?
It's a mix of areas. So if you're a registered charity, you have to file with us annually your annual report and accounts. We do some proactive work reviewing those. And if there are certain triggers, then we will step in proactively, do a review. Others are the public contacting us directly, raising an issue. And we also have whistleblowers from charities. So it's a very well-regulated, very well-overseen sector.
What about actual fraud, David? What about actual criminals defrauding people and pretending to be a charity?
As Philippa said earlier, there are 170,000 charities across England and Wales now, all doing great work. Fraud, thankfully, is still in the minority. Now, obviously, whenever you have any potential giving season, when you have a big event, sadly, scammers will always try and take advantage of such situations. The key thing is to check the register online. Make sure if something does happen that you report it. So if you do have an issue, report it to Action Fraud in the first instance, to the fundraising regulator, or to us as the charity regulator.
Mm. And I suppose if you feel threatened in any kind of moment with somebody asking for money and you're feeling concerned, dial 999. What about then changes to employers' national insurance contributions that some businesses and some charities face from April next year? Well, Nick Goom is head of income generation at the charity Step by Step, which is a youth homelessness charity. It provides accommodation, development opportunities and specialist support services to young people who are going through difficult times. Now, it has 85 paid staff and 30 volunteers. And I spoke to her a little bit earlier.
The impact of the national insurance rise is about 66,000. Obviously, the government have then provided some relief by removing the cap on employment allowance, which means we can claim about £10,500 back of that, but it still leaves us with a £55,000 gap. In addition, we've got the changes to the real living wage, and as a real living wage employer, we're going to feel that effect too.
And how are donations alongside this? Is it a struggle at the moment, or are you able to manage those extra costs?
It's going to be a struggle. It's always a struggle to try and find enough money for the charity, which is why we diversify the way in which we're doing it. We have our Be the Hero campaign. We have our Open Doors appeal, which we're currently running. We have seen a decrease over the last few years in the levels of donation. And that's why Christmas is so important to us, because we generally see a 418% increase in donations around Christmas time. It's such an important time for us to try and really generate income for the charity.
Nick Goom there telling me about the challenges for Step by Step and highlighting again how important that Christmas season of giving can be. A spokesperson for the Treasury told us that the tax regime for charities, including exemption from paying business rates, is among the most generous of anywhere in the world. And they also said the government had doubled the employment allowance to £10,500, meaning that more than half of all employers with NICS liabilities either gain or see no change next year. Philippa, what about the rest though? What are you hearing? Are other charities worried about the rise in national insurance costs?
They are. And we really share the concerns of the others in the sector about the impact this will have, just like the guest you had on just now. They're already, as she said, coping with significantly higher demand, and there are fewer funding opportunities. And unlike businesses, charities aren't able to pass on these increases in cost to any customers. They don't have any customers. And so when things like this happen, they need to take the funding from elsewhere. And that can be from really valuable service programmes and like doing the work that they're there to do.
David, Philip is making a really good point, isn't she, that charities don't have customers they can just pass the increased costs onto. That must also be true for those recent rises in costs, you know, just the cost of living increase that we've all seen. They can't charge more to offset inflation.
Absolutely. It's been a really challenging time for charities, and I've been engaging with leaders across the sector in recent months. It's true to say charities don't have the same options that businesses do. They can't simply raise prices. They can't reduce services when service demand is rising. So their options are limited. But leaders in the sector are working together. They are looking at how they respond to this. And the sector has a very, very strong history of always looking for different and innovative solutions when faced with these challenges.
We've had an email from Penny who says, I have a direct debit set up with a company where every month I pick three charities to give to. They're often small charities that I wouldn't have heard of, and I know my donation will make a difference. I like the fact my money goes to lots of charities over the year. Penny, thank you so much for that. Right, we've heard from people like Penny who donate. We've heard from charities. There is, of course, another group of amazing people that charities really rely on, and that's volunteer fundraisers. So I am extremely happy to be joined by Freddie and Huey, who are two young teenagers raising a huge amount of money for children undergoing cancer treatment. Boys, hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming on the programme. Huey, let's start with you. This is a really personal thing for you, isn't it? You were diagnosed aged just 10. Tell me about that, and tell me what your friend Freddie did.
Yeah, so in September 2020, I was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukaemia at the Royal Manchester Children's Hospital. And it's obviously a news that absolutely nobody wants. Mm. And I spent about 6 weeks in hospital in my initial sort of treatment phase. I was just trying to like plod along, and then Freddie decided to come up with the fundraising challenge.
Yeah, so when Hugh was in hospital, I wanted to take his mind off all the treatment and what he was having to go through. So I decided to do a fundraising challenge where I ran 2 kilometres a day for 50 days in the lead up to Christmas.
Wow. And so he knew that you were supporting him. We'll come on to what you're doing now. But Huey, I think a lot of people listening will just want to know where you are in that journey. You're through your treatment now.
Yes, so I finished my treatment in January this year, which is, it was such a good feeling to ring the bell, and it was really good to get it all done with, and it's a relief that I don't have to go back to the hospital as much anymore, but it's still such an important place for both me and Freddie.
Okay, so you were better. You and Freddie decided that you would fundraise together. So Huey, tell me what you decided to do.
So we decided to do another running challenge where we ran 1 kilometre around all the football grounds in the Premier League and the EFL. We both love football, so it's like it's just something that we wanted to do from the beginning. And when I was better, we were like, let's make it happen. We're up to about run 35.
Out of how many?
There's 100.
Wow. Okay. So it's you've got a way to go yet.
Just a little bit.
Freddie, what's it like? Because you run around these pitches, not just kind of in your spare time, but usually on match days when the whole stadium is full.
Yeah, it's really fun to do. It's a lot of hard work for like sorting out and stuff. But when we get on to run around them, it's so much fun to do and to raise the money for the charities and the local hospitals to the ground, because that's where the money we fundraise for goes to. So it goes to the nearest children's oncology ward to that ground that we run at.
Absolutely amazing that you two are so young and achieving this, because Huey, you've already raised I can't quite believe this number, an incredible £400,000 for the Royal Manchester Children's Hospital. Just incredible. What was that money spent on? What did you raise it for?
So we got a list at the beginning of our fundraising saying these are some things that we'd like to do, but it's up to us to decide if we want to do some more little things, if we want to like put something else in there. And we've spent quite a lot of money on medical things, like we bought a blood transfusion for a blood machine for A&E to make blood transfusions go quickly, and we think the thing that's most important is just making hospital better than just sitting around in a hospital bed. So we've managed to front a campaign that has funded the rooftop play area at the hospital. We've got music therapy on the ward and just little things like that.
And okay, very quickly, Freddie, any advice for any other kids listening and thinking they would like to raise money for a good cause?
Yeah, I think it's really important to do something, especially if someone you know is going through something hard like QB were. Mm. But just to do something and raise just a little bit for anything can help, because
absolutely.
When I started, I only set out to raise £1,000.
Well, you've absolutely smashed that, Freddie. Freddie and Huey, thank you so much for joining us on Moneybox Live.
Thank
just
you.
Incredible. Your parents must be very, very proud. Well, it might be the season for giving, but we don't want to take too much of your time with this Moneybox Live podcast, so we'll leave it there. Thank you to everybody who took part, and thank you, of course, to our experts. I was joined by Philippa Cornish, Head of Charities at the Charities Aid Foundation, and David Holdsworth, Chief Executive of the Charity Commission for England and Wales. Paul Lewis is back with the next Moneybox on Saturday. He'll be talking about different kinds of cash that can be claimed by pensioners who've lost the winter fuel payment but still need help. If there's a topic that you want us to take a look at, please get in touch. You can email moneybox@bbc.co.uk, or you can send a voice note or comment to Moneybox on WhatsApp. The number is 03306 783 183. In this podcast, the producers were Sarah Rogers and Catherine Lund, the production coordinator Emma Smith, the studio manager Simon Kelsey. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
The Wreath Lectures 2024, hosted by me, Anita Arnand.
The series is about the complexity of human violence. All violence is not the same, and all violence perpetrators are not the same.
4 questions about violence, explored by the forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Gwen Adshead.
By listening to perpetrators, we can learn more about the genesis of violence, and perhaps particularly where we might be able to intervene to reduce the risk of violence happening in the future.
The Wreath Lectures from BBC Radio 4. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London, joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like this, the secret that's there.
I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me, was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice. And for other people to not be hurt, for things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemise some of that evil stuff that went on and take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.